Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. What happens when the world sees your kid one way, but you see him a whole other way because he's autistic? Well, that's happened with my next guest. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and I'll see you on the other side. See you there.
I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studio. Today I'm joined with Kathleen Summers. Welcome to the show, Kathleen.
Hi, Reed. Thank you for having me.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and we'll get started.
So I am a mother of a 24-year-old son who has Asperger syndrome, and it has been quite a journey. So because of this, because it has been a struggle, it's been, we've had ups, downs, all arounds. I had decided long ago that I need to just like kind of document everything we've been through. When he was diagnosed, which was 2006 or 2007, there was nothing out there in terms of, candid accountings by parents raising a child on the spectrum with Asperger's, however you want to define it. There was very little information available. His therapist didn't really know much about it. His teachers didn't know much about it. And I was searching for, some support from a parent who was living it or had lived it. And there was nothing out there. And today there's still very little out there that gives you the realistic, honest, candid, authentic accounting of what it's like day after day to live with somebody who lives in a different world, essentially, plays by different rules. So I decided to write a book about my journey with him, and not as I didn't intend for it to be a parenting guidebook, because I certainly had none of the answers. It's not a how-to or a best practices. It became a memoir, because not only did I not know what I was doing, but I was learning and growing myself so much in the process. So the book is titled Barely Visible. It'll be out April 1st of 2025. It is available for pre-order. But that is my life. He's the center of my world, and getting him to a point where he is independent is my main goal.
All right. Now, what made you realize that he was autistic?
That's where the comedy comes in. It started maybe when he was 3 or 4. He became obsessed with accessories. We went through many different rounds of things he couldn't be without. First, it was plaid shirts. He had to wear a plaid shirt every day. Then he went to wristwatches, and he always had to be wearing a wristwatch. And if we went to the store, if he saw somebody wearing a watch and it was on their left arm and his was on his right, we had to stop and move it to his left arm. So we went through a long wristwatch phase. We then moved to belts. He had to always wear a belt, whether his pants had belt loops or not. And then we moved into a three-piece suit phase, where at four years of age, he asked me, could you buy me a three-piece suit? And everywhere we went, he needed to wear his three-piece suit. So there was just a lot of weird, what we would call phases. Certainly there were food phases where he would get stuck on one food and not want to eat anything else. He could jigsaw puzzles. He could dump a puzzle out on the floor, and he could assemble it as quickly as you could put the pieces back in the box without even looking at the picture. He just had this ability to do something that other kids weren't doing. And he, you know, there was he never had any interest in playing with cars and trucks like boys do. He wanted to pull all the pots and pans out of the cabinets every day and pretend he was cooking meals. I mean, he just had this odd set of behaviors. So at the time, 4 or 5 years of age, we're thinking, well, that's cute, that's funny. He's, going to grow up to be this unique person, which he is. But it was more an obsessive, compulsive pattern developing. And then once he reached school age and entered kindergarten, then things started to kind of unravel a little bit. He didn't know how to behave in a classroom. He would knock the other kids' blocks over. He would run around the room, be unable to sit down, sit still. And then reports started coming from the teachers. So, 6, 7 years of age, we're getting all these reports, there's something wrong here. And so we had no choice but to address it and pursue, well, what is this something that's wrong?
All right. What are some of the challenges you faced raising him?
The biggest challenge, so the title of my book is Barely Visible. And the reason for that is because if you were to look at my son, he is physically beautiful. He has always played sports. He has always been involved in all of the things that regular kids do. As an adult, he drives a car, he has a job, he's in school. He looks like everybody else. But he is not like everyone else. And that, I think, is the single biggest challenge of Asperger's syndrome, is that he wants everyone to see him in the same way they view everyone else. Yet he is programmed in such a way that he doesn't respond in the same ways that everyone else does. So that has definitely been the biggest challenge. And that was all through school, especially with sports. The minute you say something to a coach, my son has this disability, suddenly your son is sitting on the bench. If you don't say something, then the coach is scratching their head saying, why was yesterday fine and today not so fine? So it's always been this fine line that we've walked.
That brings up a good point. People don't realize why we call it the invisible disability. It's
Exactly.
because they see us day to day, but they don't see the other side.
Right.
The disability it doesn't show, and people don't realize what they see is not 100% what you're getting.
Right.
You're only seeing part of our lives. You're not seeing the rest. Autism isn't like Down's, where you can tell a person right away. It's a mental disorder. It's not a physical disorder. And people don't realize it doesn't change us who we are. It just changes how we think, how we see the world. We are the same as you and me, as everybody else. We just think and see the world differently.
Right. So my biggest concern is now that he's an adult and he's going to be moving into the world independently, when he was in school, there was his father and I, we were always there to guide him and, kind of be the bumpers on the bowling alley. We could keep him moving forward in a straight path and buffer the responses from everyone else. But now that he's moving into the real world, I can't continue to do that for him in perpetuity. And case in point, he's working in a job and instructions will be given to him, and some of those instructions are implied. And if he doesn't ask enough questions because he doesn't want to look stupid, he suddenly is not doing the right thing. And then he's seen as being stupid or he's not qualified, and it's simply because he doesn't understand the communication.
That seems to be the biggest issue with people, with us, is they think, oh, I can give you a set of instructions and you can, or tell you a set of things to do and you'll follow it. Yeah, but there's those of us who are very much visual thinkers. We need to have you show us what to do, how to do it, and then our mind's able to process what you're showing us. And then,
Right.
okay, one of the things you should tell your son is, It's okay to ask. It doesn't make you look stupid. It makes you look curious. And it says, hey, I want clarification on this.
Right. I do, I do think I have learned so much, and I have, despite having gone about this in reverse, I pulled out all of my hair first and then learned the hard lessons. But I do think that I have done a reasonable job of, continuing to support him and say, don't be afraid to ask this. Don't be afraid to ask that. Do this, do that. But he also gets so easily overwhelmed that in those moments when I'm not there saying, hey, ask this, he doesn't know what to do. So it's a catch 22. It's, how do you put somebody out there in the world that it, for all intents and purposes, should fit right in, but doesn't, can't seem to find their place?
It's hard. I mean, one of the things you can tell them is, listen, it's becoming time you advocate for yourself. You need to explain to people, hey, I have autism. What can you do to help me in this place? And this is what you can do to help me.
Right. That would be my number one, top of my wish list. If I could have anything, it would be for him to embrace who he is and be able to vocalize it and be able to self-advocate. Because without being able to self-advocate, he is always going to be held in place by his limitations, and he is capable of so much.
I mean, that's the one thing people don't realize is we may be different, we may see the world differently, but because of our autism and what we're doing is if it's one of our special interests, we do it to the nth degree. We do it better than everyone else because it's something we have a passion for.
Right. And I wish I could, as I have said, he is obsessive about baseball. He loves sports statistics. I wish I could get a hold of every owner of every team and say, hey, my son could be a great asset for your team. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. I mean, he is the guy from the movie Moneyball that could help rebuild a failing team and make it a winning team based solely on the performance of the players versus, how much money is available. So I have to continue to look forward. I have to have faith that he is going to find his way. I think as he gets older, he is realizing his limitations and becoming accepting of the fact that I do have limitations and the world is imposing upon me restrictions because I don't operate the same way everyone else does. And he's becoming okay with that. He doesn't want to vocalize it, but he's becoming okay with the idea that he's not going to make a gazillion dollars. He may never own a home, but he will find his place one way or another.
That reminds me of my father. He used to tell me all the time when I was looking for work, he's like, you always wanted to be the CEO of IBM or the president of this and that. He's like, you got to start from the bottom up.
Right.
Because my dad's like, you always want the best of things.
Right.
You always want the most expensive thing. And then I always tell him, I would be like, Dad, that's because I don't want something that's gonna fail in 2 to 3 years. I want something that will last me a lifetime. My mom used to be like that with him about things like glasses. She'd be like, listen, you can't just buy a cheap pair of glasses because this is something you're gonna be wearing for the rest of your life. You don't want them to break down. They have to buy a new pair, like a pair of shoes.
Right, exactly.
Now,
So
what are, go on.
I wrote this book because I didn't have any of the community or the support, the perspective of somebody else that had already been through this journey. And I wanted to share our stories so that someone else that's raising a 6 or 7 year old at the moment can understand some of the strange behaviors or some of the hurdles that we faced in school and with sports, and, you know, simply not feel so alone.
Yeah, I mean, now that brings me up to a great question. What are some of the joys of raising him?
Oh my goodness. There is not a single day that goes by that I don't hear, "Love you, Mom." Now, that is a double-edged sword because part and parcel with his Asperger's, he has a vocal tic. And as a child, him repeating, "Love you, Mom," was a way of reducing anxiety. So every now and then, as an adult, he'll say, "Love you, Mom." And I have learned to determine when he's trying to get himself out of trouble versus when he means it sincerely. But the truth of the matter is, 90% of the time, he is being sincere and he sees me as his biggest fan, his biggest supporter. We are close friends. He still, every year on his birthday, he wants to spend the day with Mom, not one of his friends. And that closeness of relationship, without relationships in life, we've got nothing. And I think, you know, that to me is the greatest joy, but also just seeing him achieve things. I mean, he's going to graduate from college. It may have taken 5 years, but he is going to graduate from college in December. And to see him pull his act together after, you know, being completely uprooted from high school and not knowing how to handle college, to see him figure it out, get good grades, determine what he's good at, what he's not good at. That in and of itself is a reward. Watching him succeed in sports, which he always played baseball. He was on 3 or 4 teams at a time every season. And baseball is a team sport. It revolves around camaraderie, which is something he couldn't grasp that aspect of the sport, but he still stood out on every team. He still gave his heart and soul because it was a team sport. So those are some of the great joys. I mean, there are numerous joys.
Have you found his special interest?
Oh, baseball is sports is without question his special interest. Every night he watches sports highlights for every game that was played that day. He knows every play, maybe not hockey, but every football team, every basketball team, every baseball team. He knows every player. He knows the statistics. He knows who was a bad trade, who's being overpaid, who a team should get to fix whatever problem it is they're trying to fix. That is his special interest, without question.
How has he been with, like, trying to make friends?
So he has one friend and acquaintances. His one friend he met in sixth grade. And God love Mick, his best friend. His friend was diagnosed with as having Asperger's himself, but he is far more independent, far more outgoing than my son is. So the two of them, they're joined at the hip. They spend every evening together. Once work and school is done, they're together every evening. Beyond that, they have some friends that like come in and out of the picture, but he's not socially prolific. He never will be. He meets people. He worked for the Philadelphia Phillies this summer. He, you know, became friendly with the people he was working with, but it ends there. It never goes beyond the workday. So I thank God every day for his best friend from sixth grade.
I mean, what people don't realize is for us, making friends is difficult because there are people who don't understand us. And then you'll find that, and I talk about this, there are friends who will be there for you thick and thin.
Right.
Who, no matter what you say or what you do, will say, "Oh, you don't mean that." Like, I have a really good friend, and we've met a long time ago. We've been friends for like 30 years. And there will be times we'll be on the phone or we'll be together going out. like going on vacation together, and I'll say something, I'll be exhausted, and I'll say something really mean and nasty to him. He's like, "Oh, Rage, you don't mean that. You're just tired and exhausted. I know you. Get some rest and you'll feel better in the morning." And so he understands me and I understand him. And that's the kind of friend you have. I have
Right.
another really good friend who's autistic like me, who we've never met. We talk a lot on Facebook. And he's taught me about the autistic world, and he's also taught me about how you can't, that my temper is probably the downfall of me because it's very short at times. He's like, you can't get angry a lot at silly things because it just makes you look bad. He's like, you just got to be calm and keep your head cool. Don't argue with people who their mind said something because it's not going to change them.
I think for my son, the biggest struggle has is socially, his biggest struggle socially is he doesn't understand how to converse with people because when you meet new people, you kind of make things up. You imagine things, you create questions in your head. Oh, let me ask this to see if they do that or they're interested in this thing or that thing. He doesn't have that ability. He communicates in a very black and white fashion. You ask him a question, he answers it. Unless there is some specific reason for him to talk to you, why would he talk to you?
Yeah.
So he just doesn't understand that level of human communication.
Which people don't understand is, yeah, we do think black and white. It doesn't make us a bad person. I mean, I have another friend who told me before we became friends, I go, "Can we be friends?" And he's like, "I don't have many friends as it's exhausting." So I said,
My son has said that.
So I said to him at the time, I'm like, okay. And then one day he had posted a message on his Instagram saying that he was exhausted and he felt burnt out and stuff. So I sent him a message. I was like, "Hey, listen, take a step back, enjoy your friend, enjoy your family, enjoy your kid. Your show isn't going anywhere." And he sent me a message back saying, "Thanks, you're a really good friend." And at that point, I knew he brought me into his friend circle. And we've been good friends ever since.
Wow, good for you.
Mean, and you're right. I mean, for people to understand us, they have to know how our minds work. It's only a very set few of people who will be willing to put up with us.
So in today's world, certainly autism is. First, it was autism awareness. Now it's autism acceptance. I do believe there is much greater awareness than there ever was. But I don't think that the world at large is doing enough to understand autism and, all of the many different forms of it. The world is not doing enough to understand it in order to accept it. So awareness, oh yeah, they're on the spectrum. Everyone can say, oh yeah, they're on the spectrum. So, don't, just let that person be. But there is not acceptance in the sense that people are willing to embrace the differences and put themselves in the shoes of somebody that's on the spectrum. And I'm guilty of it myself. I have seen my son react to temperature. You get in the car and it's okay, it's a little warm. I'm putting the air on. It'll take a few minutes. I've seen him react in ways that to me seem absolutely extreme, but I can do the same thing. It's just I might not do it to the same degree. So I have to remind myself. And then my husband is the complete opposite. So I have to look at my husband and say, okay, he doesn't understand how I react. So now I can understand that I don't understand my son. We are all different, and you need to see it from both sides of the aisle.
Has it ever occurred to you that you may be autistic because it is hereditary?
It has occurred to me, yes. I definitely exhibit a lot of the same. I always say that my, the phrase, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. You expect your child to be a perfect reflection of you. And the truth of the matter is, my son is a perfect reflection of all my faults. I mean, I have a high level of anxiety. I don't like the heat any more than he does. I could go on down the line. So, yes, I have thought that. I also have come to the realization that his father, my ex-husband, his father is on the spectrum. He was never formally diagnosed. It was not something that I understood when we got married. It wasn't something I figured out until we were raising our son. And the similarities are uncanny. And so I recognize that my ex-husband is on the spectrum. What's scary is that my son finally recognized it, and now he's forced to look at his father in the way that people look at him, which makes me sad, but at the same time, I think it's helping my son to accept his own disability or neuro ability. So
I mean, it's like my father, who growing up, he was never good with spelling. And me, I'm really good at it in the sense that I can, in my head, I can spell it out by breaking it down. And my dad would always come to me and go, "Hey, Reed, how do you spell it? Or how do you do this?" And I'd do it. And I remember my dad used to work at the University of work at Northeastern Illinois University here in Chicago, and started off as a locksmith and then became the microcomputer specialist. And I remember I used to go with him at work some days, and he would introduce me to all the teachers and the faculty. And into my head, I'd think, when people say, "You look like your father," I'd feel a little bit embarrassed at the time. And then my mom is like, "Why are you embarrassed? Your father was well loved." I'm like, "Just because people said I looked like him." And then now that he's gone and I look back at myself, I'm like, I should be proud to be like him.
Oh,
Look
absolutely.
like him. He was a
Absolutely.
well-liked man. People loved him. He taught me everything I knew about computers, and I still live it to this day.
Well, that's a wonderful perspective to have. And I'm hoping that, as my son goes through this confusion of figuring out or refiguring out who his father is, it will help him to come full circle and love both himself and his father in different ways.
I mean, one of the greatest stories I remember about how we think, and as you said, your son thinks black and white. It's the same thing with me. My mom's like, "You always see either this or that. You never see that middle line." And it's like, even with cooking, my mom's like, "When you're, it's not exact science. It could be off a little, and it could be off here. It doesn't have to be exact." And it would drive her nuts. If I'm baking, my mom is like, "You don't have to be exact on everything. If you're off by a little bit, it's not going to ruin it."
Right. So
Or
funny anecdote.
when I would do stuff, my mom would always remind me, "Listen, you need to measure out your ingredients. Don't have everything out and then measure them out. Measure it out and then put the stuff up, then put the stuff away." Because my mom would just always tell me, "I know where you've been because it looked like a tornado came for the house. There would be a mess everywhere."
Exactly. Exactly. So, funny anecdote about cooking. One day, my son must have been about 16. He came home from school and he said, "What's for dinner?" And I said, "Chicken cutlets and possibly soup." And he's walking up the stairs away from me and he said, "There is no way I'm eating possibly soup." So, and I have a list of things like that, though, just that absolute literal interpretation of, Everything you say. And those are the funny moments. You know, I say that my journey with him is part horror story, part comedy, and all parts love, for sure.
That reminds me of a great story. I was at the autism convention, the podcast convention. I was talking with this one guy, and we're sitting down talking, and he's like, "My girlfriend's kid is autistic," and he's like, "He didn't understand when I said we're gonna play things by ear. He didn't understand what that meant." He's like,
Right.
"What do you mean you're gonna play it by ear? You're gonna listen to it?"
Right,
And
exactly.
I asked my friend that too. I'm like, "You're autistic like me. When I say we're gonna play it by ear, what does that mean?"
Right.
And he's like this. I'm like, "No, that's not what it means.
Oh.
It's nothing to do with music.
Right.
Play it by ear means you're gonna take it as it goes."
Right. Yeah, my son does not. I mean, obviously he's not dumb, so he has grown up figuring out a lot of those things. But just every now and then you say something, or he'll say something that is so literal, and it just makes me laugh, which is a good thing. It's a great thing.
Does he get humor and sarcasm?
No,
Yeah, that's one of our biggest faults.
he was getting ready. It was junior year of high school, and he had decided, he was adamant, he wanted to go to college. And we knew then that for him to take the SATs would be a waste of time, because the SATs are very conceptually based, but the ACT tests are much more, they're concrete questions and answers. So, and now I forget where I was going with this. It'll come back to me. It'll come back to me. Oh, I know. Sorry, sorry. So
Not a problem.
he was playing baseball on a team with a kid, Brandon Testa. And so one day I pick him up from practice, and my son is going, "Testa, Testa, 1, 2, Testa." And I'm laughing because he's just, clowning around. And all of a sudden he got, so the reason we wanted to, we knew that he was going to have to go to a, he was going to have to submit his test scores to test optional schools, because they weren't going to be good. And so he's, making fun of Brandon Testa's name. And then he all of a sudden became dead serious. And he looks at me and he goes, "Brandon Testa scored a perfect score on his SATs. I guess he's not going to be needing a test optional school." And it was just, and I said to him, that was funny. I think it's the one and only time that he had made a joke and knew that he made a joke. He does not get knock-knock jokes. He just can't comprehend the nuances of humor.
That reminds me of me. I would be the butt of every joke in the family. They would. We'd be sitting at the dinner table, and my brother would, or my father would crack a joke, and I would walk right into it. And my mom would just look at them both and go, "You know your brother or Reed didn't get that as a joke. It's not funny to him. It's
Right.
funny to you, but
Right.
he didn't get it."
Right. Right. So,
And then.
a lot of people communicate with sarcasm. I mean, that is just the way of the world, and that scares me. Like you said, you worry that you're going to say the wrong thing and get in trouble because of it. I worry that someone is going to say something to him at some point along the line in a sarcastic tone, and he's going to react negatively because he takes it negatively. He'll take it seriously, literally. So,
Now, what is school like for him?
school has been up and down. I think when he there were he started out in college living, certainly in grade school and high school, school was okay because there were plenty of people looking over his shoulder to make sure that he was doing his work, getting the best grades that he was capable of getting. It was when he went to college, when suddenly, it's out of sight, out of mind, nobody's looking over your shoulder, that the reality of it came into play. When he started college, he lived on campus, He lived in a dorm room on it by himself. He did not have a roommate because we figured it would be best for him to have that safe place. That safe place became his haven, and so he kind of checked out of classes initially because it was too much for him to handle. And so even though he was in college, it was, wow, we've got to get somebody that can look over his shoulder, disability resource center, an academic coach. So not necessarily mom and dad making sure he's doing everything, but just, support from the school standpoint. Once we did that, he started to realize, okay, I need to really hunker down and put forth more effort than I did when I was in high school. And it wasn't until he lost his opportunity to play college baseball that he recognized that how important good grades are. And he will graduate with a 3.0, if not higher. So he has, he lost out on the thing he wanted most, but he learned so much more in the process of doing that.
Good for him.
Yeah,
I
I am
remember.
incredibly proud.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when my parents first sent me away to college to the University of Wisconsin in Oshkosh. They were supposed to have a really good program. This is before we knew I was autistic. And right out of high school, which was the biggest mistake, I couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle having roommates. I couldn't handle a lot of it. And I just, my the second time after the semester was over, I come home and I just looked at my parents. I'm like, I'm not going back. I'm dropping out. It's just too much for me to handle at the time. And my parents are like, okay.
So
And
my
then through time,
Go
go on.
ahead. No, continue.
And then through time, I came across Colorado Technical University online. And that was great because everything was done at my pace. I attended classes online, they were live, and I wound up graduating with a 3.05.
Wow, great. Good for you.
And my mom was like, "You should be proud of yourself because you did this without any help from me or your father."
Wow. Yeah, that's fantastic. So, two things here. That you would think that the pandemic would have been the best thing for my son because suddenly everything was virtual. But it was the pandemic came at completely the wrong time for him because he was just starting to understand living away from home and, needing to interact with kids that are of an age that they're not all that forgiving, and there's a lot of innuendo. And the pandemic was the kiss of death for him because I think he started to taste independence and suddenly it was ripped away. But that aside, before he even started at college, he, like I said, I've mentioned baseball several times. He had been offered, he knew he wanted to go to a small school and he knew he wanted that school to be close to home.
Okay.
He was offered a starting pitcher's position at a small school, but it was an hour and a half from home. And he gave that up because he was scared to death to be that far from home. And so there have been so many points along the way that have broken my heart. Yet I'm so proud of him for making those choices because that's what was good for him. He
I
needs
mean,
to know to make the choices that are going to enable him to succeed.
people need to understand is how our minds think. We think in a logical way what would be good for us and not what's good in general. He thought, yeah, he could get that scholarship with the starting position, but it's further away from home. I want to be closer. Closer to home meant more to him than getting that position. So he chose a smarter choice in his mind.
Right.
Where others would have taken it, for us, it's what's best for us. That's how we think.
Right.
Now, does he have ADHD as well?
So he was diagnosed with ADHD when he was young. I live in a house full of men, and they all have ADD to some degree. He does not exhibit, in my mind, the typical characteristics of ADD. He is incredibly organized. He's very conscientious of his schedule. He's not forgetful about things. So I don't, he's got so many different aspects of his autism. I don't think ADHD is one of them.
All right. Does he have any sensory issues?
Oh, big time. Yes. The temperature has to be just right. I went out to move his car out of the driveway one day in January, and the air conditioner was on full blast. And
Really?
this is a 20 degree day. So he is incredibly sensitive to heat. When he was young, he would go off to, so this doesn't even make any sense. He was incredibly sensitive to heat, yet he would go to summer camp every day wearing three pairs of pants, two pairs of underwear, and three shirts, one of them being a long sleeve shirt. And every day I would get a call saying, it's going to be 92 degrees today. And he wouldn't take any of those clothes off to go in the pool to cool off. At a young age, there was something about that being confined within all of that clothing that was comforting to him. As he got older, it's primarily heat that he is sensitive to, and sound too. If we're in a we had gone to a all-star baseball Major League Baseball's All-Star Week, and we went to the Home Run Derby at Nationals Park in Washington, D.C., and it was incredibly loud. And he had been waiting months to go to this event. And we almost had to leave because the noise was too much for him to handle. So, yeah, sensory issues for sure.
Does he have any heightened sensitivities, like to sound, to smell, to taste?
To taste, I mean, his food vocabulary is incredibly limited. It's either spaghetti and meatballs, chicken, steak. Hamburgers. There's no experimentation with food in any respect. And that spills over to, thankfully, drinking drugs, smoking cigarettes. Sensitivity to sound, like I just mentioned. And what was the other one you?
Hey, Mel.
Smell doesn't, actually, he is sensitive to smell. So, things have to be pretty even in all respects, no matter where you go. And a lot of the trips we have planned, our destination is based on what the temperature is. What's the average temperature of, that week in June?
All right. Now, let's talk a little bit about your book. What inspired you to write it?
Just needing an out, number one, needing an outlet for myself. I think not really understanding everything that we were dealing with as parents, not fully understanding him. Just by, it started out simply as making notes, just writing down anecdotes. And, at times, like I said, it was a comedy show. So I had started writing things down simply because I didn't ever want to forget them because they were so funny. And it was all rooted in his black and white nature or his inability to manage extremes. But really, truthfully, it was wanting to share our story so that someone else who is going through it today can have that perspective of someone who's been through it and not feel so alone. There are a few books out there that are candid. The books written by parents of children on the spectrum tend to be, you know, we rolled up our sleeves and we dug right in and we armed ourselves with as much information as possible. And, you know, we're rah-rah champion parents. That is not my story. And I didn't pretend to tell a story that makes me out to be some champion parent, because, you know, not only were we dealing with his diagnosis, we were dealing with getting divorced. So the, you know, the reality of life was swirling around us and we ignored his diagnosis for a long time. So it's not this glamorous story, and I don't want to pretend that it is. I want people to know that, you know, you've got other things going on in life. Fortunately, we didn't have any other children, so there wasn't that distraction. That kind of made it easier, and it also made it harder. But I know people that are raising kids on the spectrum that have four other kids that they need to manage. And that's not easy. It's not glamorous. They're not being champion parents. So I wanted to tell that story in a very honest fashion.
Now, what did your son think about the book?
He was fine with me writing this book and telling our story as honestly as I possibly could, as long as I changed all of the names. So funny story. I said to him, okay, you want me to change the names? If you could pick a name for yourself, what would it be? And him, taking my question literally, says, a boy's name or a girl's name? And I said, I'm like, okay, a boy's name, please. So he has opted to be Jack. So my story is about Jack.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what advice do you have for mothers who are raising a child on the spectrum?
Oh, it's okay to be afraid, but don't be silent. Don't be silent with your child. Help them to know who they are from the day you find out their diagnosis. Help them to know who they are. Help them to embrace who they are. And be vocal with coaches, teachers, neighbors, family. You know, just my parents knew what we were going through. They knew that our son was diagnosed. They were there every step of the way. And yet there were so many times where I had to remind my mother, don't you get it? Don't you understand that he is different than us? So don't be afraid and don't be silent.
Yeah. What was it like writing your book?
Tough. It's really tough. And I'll tell you why. One, it's a tremendous amount of work. Two, you can't possibly include every last detail. So it's cherry picking those stories that help to form a narrative. I think the biggest thing is that it took me 9 years to write it, maybe not nine seriously. You know, it was maybe 4 or 5 years of writing notes, just keeping notes here and there. And then 4 years of pulling it together and seriously writing it. But I spent 9 years living in the past. While I'm raising my son, I'm living in the past, trying to recall memories, trying to recall conversations, details, how I felt in that moment, decisions that I made. And I question, did that time living in the past skew my perception of what was happening in the present moment? And did it perhaps alter my responses in a negative fashion that have impacted the future? So, you know, I'm ready to give birth to this book, to put the past behind me so that I can be fully present for him and focus on him today to help him have his best future.
All right, and finally, where can people find your book when it's finally available online?
Well, it is available for pre-order today. You can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Target. It will be released officially April 1st, 2025 by She Writes Press. but it can be purchased today if anybody wants to read it, or read it or purchase it in advance.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Reed Miles. That was Kathleen Summers. I'll see you on the next one. Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you.